If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we are doing the Power Slam podcast by the king of the Power Slam, the magazine, not the move, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
I'm doing all right this week, Kenny. Doing all right, but enjoying this beautiful weather. It's like the end of May. What's going on?
It's also the beginning of the end of the world, but yeah, it's the end of May.
Well, there is that, yes. But let's enjoy it while it lasts, Kenny.
Yeah, we'll probably die before it gets too terrible. So, you know, there's that.
I see, yeah. Well, at least I will. You'll be all right. You'll still be around for the carnage.
I've got that to look forward to.
Oh, yes.
But good week so far?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, not bad, Kenny. Yeah, I've been doing some writing, you know, got back into the writing, submitted a first column to Inside the Ropes Patreon earlier in the week. I'll be sending my second column, What's Going Down, tomorrow. So I feel like all the words are flowing again.
There you go. Happy days. I've been gearing up for the Gold Dust Tour, which takes place next week, which should be pretty exciting. And then today, I don't really go to meet and greets. Like, I don't go to them because I feel it's quite weird about it because of my job and stuff. But anyway, I got an email from a theatre in London telling me that Kelsey Grammer, a.k.a. Fraser Crane, is going to be doing an evening with in London in June, and there's an opportunity to get a photo with him afterwards, so I've signed up to that, and I'm very excited to meet Fraser Crane in person. So that's something for me to look forward to in June.
Oh, well, it'd be nice to go to one of these events and just be a fan, won't it?
Yeah, exactly, because whenever I go to a wrestling one, I'm always like, oh my God, what if somebody sees me? And I just look like I'm this weirdo trying to like scout or something, so... much better to go to a non-wrestling one.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's loads and loads of stuff to talk about. Loads of news. So, I mean, where do we even start? Okay, well, let's start off with a couple of little bits and pieces about AEW. They have announced that Young Bucks are going to take on Pentagon and Phoenix at Double or Nothing. They've also announced that Bea Priestley is going to be part of the roster. Cody also talked about the fact that the Road to Nothing is going to be built by their two YouTube series, Being the Elite and Road to Double or Nothing. And then also Brandi Rhodes announced earlier on this week that AEW are teaming up with a company. I'm going to get their name because I don't want to butcher it. There is a company in America which is all about inclusivity. It's called Culture City, which is a kind of non-profit organization which is ensuring that children have a limitless future regardless of their diagnosis. So it's, I guess, something to do with like people who might not be able to go to large-scale events, and they might not be able to, you know, go to a wrestling show because it's too overwhelming for them. So, you know, I assume that's going to mean some events and some meet and greets and stuff where, you know, if you're a fan of AEW but you're not someone who can go out and participate in large-scale events, that there's maybe something that you can go to, which is a really cool thing for them to do. What do you make of all the AEW news this week? Anything screaming out to you?
Well, I mean, the Lucha Brothers, not Lucha Dragons, Lucha Brothers versus Young Bucks match, that was obvious after the angle at the press conference. But as I've said before, they are wheeling this information out slowly and steadily, so there's always something to talk about, which is smart since they're not actually running any shows at the moment, and the next show is not until we're still nearly 3 months off, isn't it? The next show, so they've got to do this. That match will be really good. I'm catching up on my Impact Wrestling, and I've just seen the episode from Mexico City on which Phoenix and Pentagon captured the Impact Tag Team title from LAX. That was another superb match between those two teams. So I don't doubt for a second the Lucha Brothers will have a sterling match with the Young Bucks. So that's really good. Yeah, really, really good that AEW is getting involved in the good causes. I mean, this is something that really any organization of any size should really be doing if they can, not only for the PR, but also because it's a really good thing to do as well. So, I mean, I think everyone gets something out of it. So, I mean, yeah, it's all interesting stuff happening with AEW. You mentioned also about, was it Bea Priestley being signed?
Yep, she's been signed.
Okay. Can't say I haven't seen that much of Bea Priestley, but what I've seen has not really impressed me, if I'm perfectly honest. But I mean, you know, in that organization, she's going to finally impress me, Kenny.
You never know. She is new. I mean, obviously she is. I worked with her a little bit at WCPW a couple of years ago. I will say, I think she's improved a lot in the couple of years that she's been around, which is good, because I think if you can improve in the first couple of years, that's a real sign that there's something there, right? Because otherwise you're just Lana.
Well, absolutely. And it takes time to be a good worker. Just time it takes time to be a good writer or a good podcaster. Well, I'm still working on the podcasting thing, so am I. But it does take time. So you know that may come across as an unfair criticism of her. Obviously, I have never really seen anything that she's done that's really impressed me, but I hope she does continue to improve and gets to the point where she does. And in a company of that size, working with better performers, that should happen.
So another story that I didn't really know about this. I don't know if you'd heard about it, but I thought it was worth bringing up for discussion. So I knew that Jeff Jarrett had put a lawsuit in against against Impact Wrestling and Anthem Entertainment in the States, right? I knew that there was something going on.
I heard about this as well.
But I didn't know exactly what it was about. So basically the gist of it is that Jeff Jarrett and Global Force Entertainment have filed a $4.8 million lawsuit against Impact Wrestling and Anthem Entertainment. And the key to the story is that the case is that Impact has not returned the master tapes of the Global Force Wrestling TV shows that were taped in Vegas in 2016, claiming that they no longer exist. I think it was PW Insider said that Impact had claimed in November, in a letter to Jeff Jarrett, the 16 one-hour episodes of Global Force Wrestling amped content sought in this question no longer exist. It was deleted in the normal course of business long before the onset of this litigation in order to free up storage space on Anthem Wrestling systems. Now, I find it very hard to believe that a wrestling company would in any way erase master tapes, especially in like a couple of years. There's no way you would do it. So Jarrett has now placed the value of these episodes.
What, a value of $48, more like.
God bless Jeff Jarrett for what he has done. So he is placing the value of each episode at $300,000, making the 16 episodes worth $4.8 million. Now, the thing is, while we might laugh at that number, he would be able to, I'm pretty confident he would be able to sell that content to WWE to put on the network.
Well, I'm sure he could, but he isn't going to get $4.8 million for it.
No, but say he got a million for them.
He wouldn't get that. WWE does not overpay for tape libraries. And this is hardly any footage at all.
But there's 16 one-hour episodes. I'm just saying, he could get something for them, right? So he could. But the thing that I think stands in his favour is that because the tapes are deleted, I mean, obviously look at the actual pun of the universe, the broken universe. But, you know, since they have been deleted, Jeff Jarrett's kind of got a bit of a case now, because there's no way to really see what they were worth if they're gone. So Jarrett's now put this in there. He had given them the master tapes when they did the merger. What do you make of the whole situation about, do you believe Anthem that they have indeed deleted them? Is this standard practice to delete them? And I mean, it's just, it's more issues for Impact and Anthem that they don't really need right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how he arrives at that valuation figure. That's just outrageous, in my opinion. I find it bizarre.
Believe in yourself and your content, Finn. You've got to believe in it.
Well, that's true. I find it strange that there would only be one. I mean, I know you can say, well, they're the masters, and of course they are, so they don't have copies, any other copies of these tapes. This footage isn't anywhere else.
But I think if you're going to, I think the idea is, I'm sure there's copies, but like if you were going to sell content, you can't just sell them a copy.
Well, that's true.
You would need to have masters to be able to I don't know. I guess it's like.
But the thing is, he did these tapings years ago. I mean, has anyone actually bought them in the interim? Has anyone shown any interest in negotiating to buy them? I mean, how has he arrived at this valuation? Who is it that wants this footage?
I mean, he would be able to sell them to WWE. I'm sure they would buy them. I don't think he's going to get $300,000 for an episode. But I've got to admit, I love him for coming to that figure. I think it's great. Like, why not? 300 grand an episode.
You've got to, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, was once in the gold business. You know what I mean?
do you know, it's funny because, you know, me and Robert back in the day and various people, we kind of used to have a running joke about Jeff Jarrett and stuff. And I always kind of remember thinking, I don't get how it's all gone so far. And then you meet him and you work with him, and he is the most charming guy you will ever meet in your life. He is funny. So I now understand why the Jeff Jarrett charm machine does work. Yeah. Because it worked on me. So I'm almost just kind of like, you know what? See if they've deleted your tapes and there's a chance here for you to get some money. Go for it. Yeah.
I mean, it just, the whole story is just the latest, you know, bizarre development in the world of you know, Planet Jarrett. So, I mean, I know years ago, like we're going back to like the 60s and the 70s, I guess the 70s it would have been. At one point, promotions would actually tape over masters. They would use tapes over and over again. I think because tapes back then were a lot more expensive and they were much larger. They just didn't have the room to store them. So I think back in like the 70s, maybe even into the 80s during the territory era, this would happen. So this did happen in the dim and distant past. But it's hard for me to believe that this would happen in 2016, 2017. I'm not saying it didn't, absolutely, definitely didn't happen, but it strikes me as peculiar that it would happen. And especially we're now in this world where WWE, as you pointed out, does buy tape libraries, doesn't spend $4.8 million on 16 hours of footage, featuring very few stars, by the way, but it does buy tape libraries. So people in this era that we're in right now are well aware of the value of these things. So that strikes me as curious as well, that they would be lost, deleted, taped over. I mean, I would have thought these would be kept under lock and key in a safe somewhere. You know, these would be something that would be safeguarded. Absolutely, they would be. There would be no way that they would risk damaging, losing, deleting, or anything, master tapes of a wrestling promotion because of their future value.
Well, because also the idea was that they were doing a merger, so they were they were coming together, and then to me, I mean, if the merger is no longer happening, don't you just hand back the tapes?
Well, you would have thought so, yeah.
That would be like, you know, for example, so we've got an idea, because we've got various PowerSlam merchandise ideas that we'd like to do in 2019. And, you know, if one of them was, say Finn's got old issues of PowerSlam, we were going to put them in the Inside the Ropes website. If at one point Finn just went, I don't want to work with Inside the Ropes anymore, the PowerSlam magazines would be returned to Finn.
Yes.
Like, I wouldn't just be like, oh, they've been destroyed.
That's it, we just burned them.
Yeah, I just burned them.
I put them in the recycling bin. They were just getting in the way. Yeah. You know, I didn't have any room. I mean, it's not going to happen, is it? And it's like, I mean,
Finn takes me to court and says, each issue is worth £500.
Well, I mean, that's fair enough. That's a fair valuation.
Not issue 88.
Not issue 88, yeah, right. I mean, what I would need in that, if such a scenario were to occur, and I hope it never does, Kenny, I think I'd probably call Jeff Jarrett. Maybe I could get him to value the issues if that hypothetical situation were to arise.
I think he's your man. I think you call him immediately.
So I just find it strange that this would have happened. You would have thought that those tapes would still exist somewhere. I mean, maybe this is all above board and they've been accidentally deleted or damaged or lost or stolen. Who knows? But it's just perplexing that firstly, Impact would put itself in this position where it would not preserve and protect these tapes in the event that Jarrett wanted them back. And since they're obviously at odds, you would think that that would be something that he would want returned, presumably for the purpose of selling them to WWE. So that's curious. And it's also curious that Jarrett would not have retrieved them prior to this date. And then I understand him filing the lawsuit, but then putting a valuation of that on them seems to me to be outrageous. I can't imagine that the case would hold up in court. I mean, maybe if he put a smaller valuation on them, he could potentially win that case. I'm not quite sure how it's all going to play out, Kenny. It's a curious story. I know that much.
It is an interesting story. Well, speaking of Impact, I did want to say, so I'd mentioned this on the Inside the Ropes podcast with Sandra, I might actually be heading to the Impact United We Stand show in New Jersey of WrestleMania weekend because there might be press opportunities, so I would go along if it was. So I wanted to just read you the card of the show and let me know what you think of it. So obviously this is the Thursday night before everything kicks off. So they're not, I think they're running head-to-head with an MLW show, but they're not running head-to-head with any WWE or ROH New Japan shows or anything like that. But here's what we've got. We've got a match with Team Impact against Team Lucha Underground, which is Johnny Impact, Brian Cage, Moose, and Eddie Edwards against Team Lucha Underground, which is Aerostar, Drago, King Cuerno, and Daga. We also have on the show Rob Van Dam and Sabu against Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix. Eli Drake versus Tessa Blanchard in an intergender match and an Ultimate X match that's got Jake, Chris, Jack Evans, and Cotto Brazil. Apparently, there's going to be Impact talent, AAA talent, and others on the show. But what do you make of that card so far? Is that WrestleMania weekend worthy?
Well, I mean, we've talked before about Sabu and Rob Van Dam versus Phoenix and Pentagon Jr., wasn't it? So, I mean, we were like, is this such a good idea? Should Sabu and RVD be teaming together at this point? Well, they are. I mean, it is an interesting match in terms of nostalgia. You would think that it's going to attract some fans who used to be fans of ECW back in the day. But as far as the other matches go, it seems like a blockbuster lineup to me, Kenny. Seems really strong. At least by the standards of what Impact is capable of presenting in its stripped-down, lower-budget state. So, yeah, it seems like it'll be a good show. So I think that's one to attend, Kenny. I think you're making the right move there.
There was also, I think it was Deadline.com had spoken to the president of Pop TV, Bradley Schwartz, and he was asked about Impact no longer being on their schedule. And he said, we had a wrestling show every Thursday night, which, by the way, was one of our 10 highest rated shows in the network. They wanted to keep going, obviously. It was 2 hours of visual content every Thursday night, 52 weeks a year, that would do 400,000 viewers each Thursday night. But we had to really start focusing on brand and expectations. And I think if you're going to pitch yourself and tell audiences that you're this place for premium content, Schitt's Creek, Flack, Florida Girls, this kind of stuff, then people need to know what to expect from you when they come to the channel. So they're basically kind of saying, they're burying it, but then, you know, Impact weren't really getting paid to be on Pop, right? So it's not as if they were getting a lot of money to be there.
No, they weren't. But I mean, they had much larger presence on Pop than they do now. I guess that's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, because now they've got 10,000 viewers a week on the Pursuit channel, and I think they've added another Twitch show, and so. Yeah. Have you been? What was the last Impact episode you've watched? Anything to update?
I am up to the February 7th episode, which is the one that featured the Lucha Brothers versus LAX match. And as I said earlier, it was a bit choppy at the start, but they got into a rhythm and the match sizzled at the end. And huge near falls at the end, perhaps a bit. You know what these guys, it's like watching Ricochet versus Johnny Gargano at the last TakeOver event. These guys kind of do I think they probably do a few too many near falls. But this is what the audience that likes these guys, same applies to Ricochet and Johnny Gargano, that's what the audience wants. So, yeah, all sorts of near falls, huge finish. And I think it was the right finish as well with Lucha Brothers going over. And really good storyline there with Pentagon Phoenix versus Santana and Ortiz and with Conan in the mix. So, yeah, I'm still a few weeks behind, but really enjoying Impact. You know, some good stuff on there. It's very stripped down. You can see it's really, they're not spending money unnecessarily. That's obvious. But most of the content, particularly the wrestling, is really strong. So, you know, if you can find a gap in your schedule, please watch the main event of February 7th Impact. And, yeah, maybe give Impact another chance.
I should mention that if you are a fan of New Japan and you're in the UK, it's worth noting that they have announced Okada, Naito and Tanahashi for their August 31st show in London. So if you're in the UK and specifically near London and you're a New Japan fan, that seems like somewhere you'd want to be. Okada, Naito and Tanahashi are pretty much their three top guys that are not Gaijins, so good for them. So the WWE announced this week that the Honky Tonk Man will be going into the Hall of Fame. He's been asked before and turned it down. You've interviewed him before. What do you make of the Honky Tonk Man going into the Hall of Fame? Is he a worthy candidate or not?
He has been asked before. We discussed that in our interview, in the Power Slam Interviews Volume 2. I mean, I think he's a worthy candidate. I absolutely do think he's a worthy candidate. He was, you know, he was a headliner in Memphis in 79, just a few years in. He's a member of the Blonde Bombers. They had the famous, legendary concession stand brawl with Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee. That's something. Have you ever seen that, Kenny?
I've not seen that.
That's something you need to watch, famous concession stand brawl between the Blonde Bombers and Dundee and Lawler. I mean, lots of people thought that like Honky couldn't really brawl or couldn't really do anything. He was a bit of a joke as a performer. But I mean, my understanding was that he could do a hell of a lot in the ring. And then when he played the Honky Tonk Man character in WWF from 86 through to 1990, I think he left, he was basically tailored the character for the cartoon era. And he was the guy who was the cowardly heel. To me, one of the greatest cowardly heels ever, because you knew that his opponent could beat Honky. You knew whether it was Brutus Beefcake, whether it was Jake Roberts, whether it was Randy Savage, whether it was Ultimate Warrior. You're like, of course the babyface can beat the Honky Tonk Man. Of course he can. So you desperately wanted to see the Honky Tonk Man lose to this babyface. You know, Honky would get in there and he would make that babyface look strong. And usually he would retain by the skin of his teeth or through, you know, skullduggery or dastardly means or on a DQ or a countout, interference from his manager, Jimmy Hart. So, I mean, to me, he was an excellent mid-card or upper mid-card heel. You've got to remember back in Honky's day, WWF was running three house shows a night. So the Intercontinental Champion, he was champ, of course, from June of 87 through to SummerSlam 1988. He would headline one of the house shows. He would not have been Intercontinental Champion for as long as he was if he was not an effective draw. Still the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion ever. So, I mean, he was a big star in that organization. He was somebody who knew his role. He knew what he needed to do to get heat, and he knew what he needed to do to put the face over and ensure that the face looked strong, even if he was going over. Obviously we did the stuff in Memphis, worked for Nick Gulas in Nashville, worked for Crockett, had a huge run actually in Stampede, where he first played the character that became the Honky Tonk Man, joined WWF in 86, actually started off as a babyface, Kenny. Honky Tonk Man was supposed to be a babyface character.
Yeah, very briefly, right?
Very briefly, there's actually, you'll find it on YouTube, there is footage of him wrestling a squash match, and there's a little sort of inset interview with Hogan, and Hogan was putting the Honky Tonk Man over. It's like, oh, you know, Honky Man, he's my, you know, he was like putting him over basically as a really good guy. So, you know, he started as a face. It did not work. They came up with a really novel gimmick to turn him heel with this sort of vote. And we talked about it, obviously, in the interview. He had this sort of public vote as to whether or not people approved of the Honky Tonk Man or not. And that was the device they used to turn him. Had, you know, really good run there as a heel, you know, feuds with Jake Roberts, Savage, won the IC title from Ricky Steamboat. Held it right through to SummerSlam 1988 when the Ultimate Warrior was like a surprise replacement for Brutus Beefcake, who had done an injury angle with Ron Bass. So Warrior came in, squashed Honky, took the title. Warrior was like over like a million bucks at the end of that short match. I mean, everyone remembers that match, don't they, Kenny? I mean, yeah, you've seen it several times. So, I mean, it was like just a short squash match, but it served its purpose, which was to heat Warrior up. And just, you know, get his title reign off to a bang. And Honky, after that, moved down the card. You know, he was in the tag team with Greg Valentine, Rhythm and Blues. And really, his sort of run was over there. I mean, post-WWF, he worked indies, had what could charitably be described as a dismal run with WCW in 1994.
Although they did come up with a great sort of knockoff Honky Tonk Man theme tune. WCW, which is excellent to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, he ended up quitting because he didn't want to. I think he didn't want to do the job to Johnny B. Badd on TV. I think that was the story. He was very sensitive about losing, certainly on TV. So he ended up like quitting. He was on like a nightly deal there. I think he was getting paid. I think he was on about $1,000 per match, which was, you know, decent money back then.
But, you know, to kind of defend him a wee bit, I mean, if his best run was when he wasn't losing, and that's what got him the heat. So I mean, I guess that's what he wanted to try and do again.
That's what he absolutely believed in, and he was very protective of his image, and he knew what WCW was like, and he was not somebody that was going to do something that he didn't think was in his best interests. So if he felt that you know, WCW didn't sign him to a guaranteed contract, he was on a nightly deal, I believe they were negotiating a contract then, it never came off. So, I mean, he just thought, well, if they're not prepared to sign me to a long-term deal, why should I put this guy over? I mean, I'd rather, you know, work weekends on indies, and I can make my own schedule and do what's right for me. So he left, never actually went back, which was kind of surprising. But I really felt like his time was up as that level performer, but as a nostalgia act. And it's like, it's funny, isn't it? Like, when an act is sort of past its best, you're like, well, you know, it's a bit sad, and then a number of years pass and then it sort of becomes a nostalgia act, and you kind of like it because you like the nostalgia aspect of it. And I think Honky's a guy that sort of always remained relevant in some way, just through doing various things, you know, whether it be shoot interviews, or I think he even made an appearance for Lucha Underground, didn't he? I think, was that season 2 or season 3? I know he's on one of the seasons anyway.
He
obviously did that little run there with Santino Marella. So he's done various things over the years to remain relevant. What was quite striking to me on Raw was when they announced it, it got a pretty damn big ovation in the venue. You know, people were really into it. And he hasn't really done anything mainstream for a long time. But, I mean, he was a really potent character. I thought he was great on promos. I thought it was terrific as this cowardly heel. And there was a lot of self-deprecating humor as well there, which I think heels need. And it's something, I don't think we have enough of that right now in WWE. There's not enough self-deprecating humor from heels who are prepared to laugh at themselves. And when it's done, it all feels kind of manufactured, because of course that's how it is there now, because everything's overly scripted. Back then it was all spontaneous. And I thought him and Jimmy Hart played off against each other really well. And I just thought he was a fun character. You know, he's been in the business since, I think his start was 76 or 77. So we're talking over 40 years. He's still in the business. He's still making money out of it. So I absolutely think he's deserving. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, you know, the other thing is he did reinvent himself in the mid-2000s by becoming the kind of cranky shoot interview guy. And he was very funny. So, you know, and I mean, it was sometimes, you know, he would do impressions of Bret Hart and stuff. And it was great. But I think he deserves to go in. The best way that I heard it described was actually from Rip Rogers, who is somebody, if you're on Twitter, I would suggest following Rip Rogers, because he's just this, like, old, angry guy who's kind of like a American wrestling legend, works in OVW and stuff. But anyway, he said this about Honky Tonk Man. And he said, to wrestling fans that don't get it, Honky Tonk Man is being inducted at the WWE Hall of Fame because he's one of the best heat magnets of all time. Fans hated him then and still hate him. He's a heel. That's why he drew big time. He got more reaction in one bump than most got in their whole match. No cool moves, just fans wanting to see him get his ass kicked. No wasted motion, just theatrics, milking, selling, and making you hate him. That, my friends, is the Honky Tonk Man. And that kind of sums him up in the best way possible.
He's right. I mean, he was an honest to goodness, an honest to goodness villain. He was in there. It was his role to make the audience dislike him and to shine the babyface. And he was somebody who really disliked the cool heels like the NWO. He felt that those guys weren't true heels. And I understand what he meant. But I mean, the NWO was obviously very successful for a number of years. But that was the way he was brought up in the business. That was the way he was taught. And, you just watch some of his stuff as Wayne Farris from Memphis. And he was a great promo guy, tremendous promo guy, really cocky. And he could get heat immediately as soon as he opened his mouth. Yeah, Rip Rogers is absolutely right. Rip Rogers actually... more famous for being a jobber, Kenny, really, than I guess you could call him a legendary jobber.
I was trying to be nicer about it. He's a jobber, but I was trying to be nicer at the guy.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to put him over.
Rip's right. Rip is right, because he's somebody that advocates for old school wrestling and getting the maximum amount out of the minimum amount of effort, the maximum amount of emotion out of the minimum amount of effort or bumps or whatever. And he's right, yeah. I mean, absolutely, he's right.
And the first wrestling event I ever watched on VHS was SummerSlam 89. And one of my favourite memories from it is Honky Tonk Man coming out to face Dusty Rhodes in his polka dots. And Jimmy Hart is going to hit Dusty Rhodes with the guitar. Honky Tonk Man's got him ready to get hit. Dusty ducks. Honky Tonk Man gets hit with the guitar. And then there's this great moment where Sean Mooney runs up to Honky Tonk Man, who's with Jimmy Hart in the aisle. And Honky Tonk Man thinks, because he's been knocked out by the guitar, thinks he's Elvis. And starts saying, I don't know if Priscilla's back there. And he just starts talking as Elvis. And you go, he gets it. Like, he's 100% that character. There's no point where you go, is he the Honky Tonk Man? Like, he played that character the entire time. I think he's great. I really, he's one of my, like, I don't know if that's a guilty pleasure, but I love the character. And even when he lost, I think it was great when, you know, he had the title for like a year and a half almost. He beat Ricky Steamboat, which was like unheard of, the idea that he would. And then the way he lost it to Ultimate Warrior, he was able to say, well, I wasn't ready. Because he didn't know he was supposed to be facing Brutus Beefcake, who was taken out by the outlaw Ron Bass. See, I've still got my knowledge. So he could use that kind of to his advantage after he lost the belt to say that he didn't deserve to lose the belt because he wasn't ready for the Ultimate Warrior. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, that's it. He didn't know that the Warrior was going to... because he was in the ring and saying, get anybody out here, you know, I'll beat anyone. You know, that was what he said in the ring. And like, you know, get him out of here, get my opponent out of here. He didn't even take his jumpsuit off. And Warrior comes out, pins him in however long it was, a very short period of time. And yeah, I wasn't ready. And then they got a series of rematches out of that. So yeah, he was a guy that was all about... he was all about making the face shine, you know. He was like a real old school heel. So he was, I'm not going to plug my interview again, Kenny.
Go on, one more time. Pro Wrestling, it's the Volume 2.
All right, yeah, it was in the Power Slam Interviews Volume 2. We talked about his entire career. Please check it out. You know, I think you'll enjoy the interview. I certainly enjoyed doing it. One of the most enjoyable interviews I've ever done, put it that way.
Because you caught him when he was still willing to just say anything. Like, he was willing to go. He was because now I think the thing that happens sometimes when you go into the Hall of Fame is you let all the bad stuff go. You just kind of go, okay, you know, I'm now. Whereas I think you managed to catch him, and he was still willing to be open and honest, or as open as he was going to be about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah, we spoke in 2016, and I think his attitude had changed towards a lot of things.
I mean, yeah, I wish you'd got him in like 2006. When he was like prime making fun of everybody. But what I mean is, like, if you were to get him now in 2019, I don't think you'd get the same interview out of him that you got in 2016.
You know, possibly not. Possibly not. But I mean, like, for instance, he had a long running feud with Jerry Lawler. He said a lot of things about Jerry Lawler that I'm not going to repeat here. And
They're
when
cousins.
we That's right. And we talked about Lawler and the feud between him and Lawler was over. And that was really uplifting to hear that they'd sorted that out after all the years of strife between them. So he really put Lawler over. So, and that was something that I wasn't expecting when I first approached him and I did my research, like, oh yeah, the feud's over. So we got talking about that. But yeah, I felt that he spoke honestly about all sorts of things in his career. I mean, going back from his very early days with Dr. D. David Schultz through Memphis and Nick Gulas and just all this stuff. We talked about the famous Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan arrest. We did a section on that. I mean, that was just eye-opening stuff. And we were talking about things like kayfabe. We were talking about money. We've got financial figures in there of how much he was paid for SummerSlam 1989 and what his biggest paydays were, how much he was earning when he was headlining with the Blonde Bombers versus Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee, why Nick Gulas was such a hated, despised, detested figure in the business, just all this old school stuff and all the like new stuff as well. So it was a real good combination of wrestling, of old time wrestling history and modern stuff as well. I mean, we even got talking about things like mafia involvement in pro wrestling, and things like that. And because I'd actually just watched the movie Walking Tall, the original Walking Tall movie with who's it? Joe? Is it Joe Don Baker? He was the famously he had a terrific role in Charlie Varick. I think he was in the lead role in that. And because he'd in real life had been a wrestler and he'd had all these dealings with all this like feud with the State Line mob. So I brought that up. I said, there's any dealings between like the State Line mob who apparently run things or Dixie Mafia who apparently run things down there in the South and wrestling. So we got talking about that as well. Just all sorts of stuff, Kenny. It was just like having a conversation with an old friend
but
and
the key
no
thing,
subject.
The key thing is, Finn, you're not going to plug it.
Let's move on, Kenny.
That's the key. You don't need to plug it for 6 minutes. So the other thing I was going to ask you before we get to Raw and SmackDown is the
what a knob I look now. Not for the first time.
My favorite part of the podcast, as always. So speaking of knobs, Bruce Prichard has been rehired by the WWE. Quite a shocking move, I guess some saw it as, and there's a lot of kind of political elements at play, but talk us through from your perspective, having covered Pritchard before, what is rehiring him mean? Why do you think they've rehired him, and what effect, if any, do you think he's going to have on being Vince's right hand man again?
Well, I mean, I suppose when they struck a deal last year with the podcast, there was like some sort of deal was done last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, they did a series of something to wrestle with on the network, which wasn't the podcast. It was like a video version that they would do on the network. And then obviously he made the appearance at Raw 25 as
yeah.
Brother Love. So, he was back in the fold in some way.
Yes. I mean, I think did he do a table for three appearance? I think he did that.
I think he did, yeah. And then he also... And it's come out in the last few days that he's actually been working as a consultant for the company since the Royal Rumble.
Okay. Well, firstly, you've got to when you enter into some sort of partnership with WWE, you've always got to sort of figure that something like this can happen, because if they're wanting to do business with you, it's always going to be for their betterment. And often it's to kind of prevent you from doing things that they don't want you doing. Now, I think they've looked at Bruce Prichard and they thought, hold on a minute, All Elite Wrestling, would they sign him? Yes, they probably would. So let's sign him before they do. I think it's been motivated by that. And that is the big shift in pro wrestling right now. All Elite Wrestling is having that effect where WWE is making these decisions that it otherwise wouldn't do because it wouldn't need to. And now it does really to protect itself and also to prevent the other company from getting any stronger. So I think it was something that was a natural progression from where they were at. I mean, as for Bruce Prichard going back and working there after all these years, I mean, it's supposed to be a tough gig. I mean, you just did the interview with David Lagana, didn't you, Kenny?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I interviewed him for Powerslam earlier in the decade, and I remember we did like a section in the interview about the schedule and the amount of hours that you've got to work when you're part of that machine, the creative machine. And it's grueling just reading it, never mind living it. So, I mean, presumably Bruce Pritchard will be back on the treadmill again. And at this sort of point in his life, I mean, you've got to figure that he's financially in a very good position. You sort of do wonder, you know, do you really want to put yourself through that? Evidently he does. What do you make of it, Kenny?
I mean, I think it's obvious that part of it is to do with AEW. And why would you let somebody who knows all the secrets and was Vince's right-hand guy go there? But, you know, the thing is, like, people can, you know, people will get on their sort of high horse and they'll, you know, go on social media and say, oh, Pritchard being back is just an example of the past. It's like, look, I'm not saying he's directly responsible for this, but in his first 2 days back, they put on two of the best episodes of TV they've done in a long time and have got people talking more than they've been talking in a long time. So he's going to have part to do with that in some way. We don't know how much, but he is definitely involved. So I think my hope from it is that he can, you know, he comes from a time when they had more continuity in their stories. They had more, and things were maybe a little bit more long-term planning-wise. And I'm hoping that he can sort of help bring that stuff out. And he can, you know, he knows how to tackle Vince. He knows when to go to him with something, when not to. I mean, he is also a yes man, so there's an element of both. But I think it could go either way. I don't think it's a dead cert that he's going to be a failure. I don't think it's a dead cert that he's going to be a rousing success. But I think he is worth a punt. Actually,
yeah, I understand why they brought him back. And I mean, he was involved with Impact Wrestling, wasn't he, for a short time? And he made, as far as I'm concerned, when he was involved, the promotion actually went downhill. So that was only quite a brief alliance there. But, you know, when he was there, which I believe was 2017, I think he was. Could be wrong about that. Could have been 2016. But he was there briefly, and I don't really think he enhanced that promotion at all. Whereas in WWE, as you just said, we had, you know, big angle at the end of Raw this week. Lots of things happening. Feels like they've got their ducks in order for WrestleMania. And as you said, there's some long-term storylines at play here, which people are sort of like, well, what are they doing? It's like, well, give the story time to develop. You know, this is what people have been, you know, crying out for literally years, I guess. And they start doing it. It's like, well, why are they doing this? It's like, well, give the story a chance. You know, it's a journey. You know, that's what it's all about. So he, as you said, he's somebody who knows how to speak to Vince. Vince is going to respect him because they've known each other for decades. And he's been a huge part of, obviously, the Undertaker and the Undertaker gimmick and Kane and all these other things that happened in the past. So Vince is going to respect his knowledge and his know-how and his opinion on things more than somebody who's in their early 20s, who has only been around the wrestling business for as long as they've been employed by WWE. So I think he's somebody who can make a difference, and I think he's somebody who will make a difference on some level. I don't know how long this is going to last. But I understand why it's happened. You know, I think it will be good for WWE, probably in the short or even into the long term. And when Bruce has had enough, he'll leave. He's got plenty of options in wrestling. We know that. And he's somebody who'll probably get a job working for the other team, AEW.
Now, we should actually very quickly mention The Undertaker before we get to Raw and SmackDown. Undertaker recently did an interview with his pastor, who, again... and he said this about his 2018 schedule. He said, right now my schedule, obviously I've been around for a while, so I've got a little bit of sweat and blood equity built up, so I get to pick and choose where I want to go and when I want to go. For some reason, I kind of lost my mind and thought I was a young 20-year-old again. And I'll give you an example. This 1 month I was in, on Monday night, we had Monday Night Raw, so I flew from Austin, Texas to Seattle, Washington, and it was on Monday. On Tuesday, I flew from Seattle to Austin. On Wednesday, I got up and flew from Austin to LA and then LA to Melbourne. So I landed in Australia on Friday. I wrestled on Saturday. I flew home on Sunday. I figured out I was actually in the air longer than I was in the country getting there and back. he said it was a crazy deal and said that something that he said, hopefully I'm a little bit smarter this year with what I do, because those weren't really fun. Obviously, him being announced for StarCast has provoked a lot of questions about his relationship with WWE. So he did say this about Vince McMahon. He's awesome. You may see him on TV and think, man, I do not like that guy, but he is awesome. He wouldn't ask MD to do anything that he wouldn't do. He's really built an empire from hard work and dedication and energy. When you see that and what he puts into it, you feel, well, I at least need to try and match that. He's an awesome leader. I call him boss, but we're like friends now more than we are employee and company owner. So I guess that kind of puts to bed any rift that they may have. It seems like everything is okay. We can relax a little bit. That noise did not sound like that. Go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, everything's harmonious in the Undertaker and Vince camp, obviously. I mean, as if the Undertaker is going to breathe a word to the contrary. He's just not going to. He's been around so long that he wouldn't do that, would he? He just wouldn't. Why would he? Why would he say anything that's going to upset the boss? He's not going to do that. So I don't know what's going on.
Does your gut say, if I had to ask your gut answer, do you think we see The Undertaker at WrestleMania, yes or no?
I think he will be there. It's hard to believe that he's going to wrestle. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's an obvious opponent for him. I don't want to see him wrestle. Do you want to see him wrestle, Kenny, at WrestleMania?
I only want to see him wrestle again if it's something that's interesting.
Okay.
I don't want to see him wrestle like a match with Triple H doesn't interest me.
No.
If it was like, you know, Deadman versus the Demon, that interests me. Like it would need to be something for me, it would need to be something interesting, and I don't know what he wants to do or what they want him to do.
I mean, normally when he makes a WrestleMania appearance, they start the hype for it around about the night after Elimination Chamber. That's usually the time. And prior to that, there's always rumors everywhere about what's going to happen. So people generally know in advance, yes, The Undertaker is going to do something at WrestleMania with this person. We haven't heard any of that this year. And it's March tomorrow, I believe. Yes, March tomorrow. It's February 28th today. So it's like, it's hard to believe that he's going to do anything. And remember, he had that match with Bray Wyatt in... was it 2000?
WrestleMania 31, 2015.
And it was just like, why is this match happening? You know, what is The Undertaker gaining from this? We didn't really gain anything from it. Bray Wyatt certainly didn't. And it was just like, it was as if it was booked just to get him on the show, which is, I think, a fair assessment of events. So I don't want to see him do something at WrestleMania, which is just booked to give him a spot on the show. I mean, an appearance in full regalia, yeah, I'm all for that.
I think this has become, by default, and we will know more soon, this has become the most interesting year for The Undertaker in years. Because there's the StarCast thing, which has kind of come out of nowhere. There's the, you know, what's he going to be doing? Is he going to be at WrestleMania? So it'll be interesting to see what the answers are.
I mean, obviously, you're still trying to. I mean, I know you've had tough therapy over this, Kenny, and everything. I mean, you're still trying to recover from his appearance on Raw 25 last year, aren't you?
Look, the appearance at Raw 25 was not for me, and if it was for you, I think you need medical help.
And so, I mean, that was just like an example. I mean, I'm hoping we're not going to have something like that at WrestleMania if he appears. But I think he'll be there just...
Do you know the thing that's frustrating is that, like, you know, and I think actually Raw and SmackDown was an example this week. I felt like watching Raw... Now, we're going to cover Raw here in the main podcast. We're probably going to cover SmackDown in the overrun, so just going to warn you guys there. But I felt like watching Raw this week, it was like watching the old days again. Cliffhangers, surprises, chaos... That's when WWE is at its best, and I think that with Undertaker, what we've seen a lot in the last couple of years is sanitized appearances.
Yeah.
That don't have any oomph to them. So if they can do something where he shows up and does something that's a bit chaotic and a bit fun, then, yeah, I don't think MD would be, well, apart from Sandra, who hates him, but, you know, everybody else would like to see him again and like to see the dead man and see him do something fun. But just hopefully they can come up with something fun.
Yeah, I mean, well, with Bruce Pritchard back on the team, I believe he was somebody who used to be heavily involved in writing his promos, or at least arranging his programs and things that he did. I think he was always heavily involved in that. So get Bruce Pritchard on it. I'm sure it's something he'd rise to the occasion. But I mean, as far as WrestleMania, I think he will be there. If for nothing else, if for no other reason than for WWE to make a public declaration that, yes, The Undertaker is still a member of Team WWE and he's not going anywhere. So I think he'll be there for that reason, and if no other reason.
Okay, so let's talk about the big moments from Raw. There's three big stories from the show. We open the show with the return of Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns comes out, huge reaction. The crowd absolutely love him. He welcome back Roman chants. He talks about his leukemia diagnosis. He talks about the support from everybody. He announces that he's in remission. He announces that he is back. And a real feel-good moment. What did you make of the segment, how it played out, and the way it was executed?
Yeah, well, we predicted. I mean, you didn't need to be clairvoyant to work this out. We knew that it was going to be something that was going to be uplifting. I didn't think it was going to be quite this uplifting. So it was a terrific segment. He looked like he really enjoyed being there. He spent a long time, like, high-fiving the fans on the way to the ring and hugging people. And he just looked almost overwhelmed to be there, didn't he? He looked elated. This, you know, you could believe that this was, like, one of the greatest moments of his life, you know, probably like getting the news that his leukemia was in remission, next to that at least. It was like welcome back chants, and you know, Reigns, he was lapping up the response, and who can blame him? He hadn't been on TV in nearly five months?
Yeah, October 22nd to February 25th. So yeah.
Sorry, 4 months. Yeah, so he hadn't been on TV in 4 months. And so it was a real feel-good segment, as you said, Kenny. You know, it was really nice to see Seth Rollins come out at the end and hug him, which was, you know, foreshadowed what was coming later on the program. So, I mean, that was nice to see as well, because it's the teammates and the pals and everything. So that was fine. And yeah, it was a real, really good moment. And it was really nice to hear the audience appreciate him. And I don't think there was any booze. Maybe there was some booze in there, but I couldn't. Maybe I was filtering them out if there were booze there, Kenny. But it was just a really uplifting segment that just restored your faith in WWE. I think that's the best way I can describe it.
So, and then obviously later on, so Seth Rollins comes out. Seth Rollins is giving him a hug. Later on, we throughout the show, we see Dean Ambrose attack Elias. We see Dean Ambrose challenge Drew McIntyre to a no DQ match. And then we see Drew, Corbin, Lashley, and Elias all beating down Dean. And then Seth and Roman come out for the save. They, you know, hit all their finishing moves in. Curb stomp, spears, Superman punches. And they leave Dean in the ring and sort of give him a stare at the end to kind of walk off. So it seems like there's going to be a brief Shield reunion. What do you make of that? And is it a good idea to do a brief Shield reunion before Dean goes away? And then also, the big question, what do you see Roman Reigns doing at WrestleMania? Nobody knows.
Well, to answer the big question first, I mean, they had Baron Corbin backstage. He was interviewed by top reporter Charlie Caruso. We could learn a lot from her, Kenny. A lot from this woman. And Corbin was basically trying to backtrack about things that he'd said about Roman Reigns. Charlie was having none of it. It was like Fiona Bruce on Question Time. She was calling him out. She wasn't taking any crap from Corbin.
She's a bastion of journalistic integrity.
Absolutely. Much like yourself, Kenny. You know, I've always looked up to you in that regard. So I enjoyed that segment. It felt to me like they were setting up a Baron Corbin versus Roman Reigns match at Fastlane. I don't know whether it's going to happen, but that's what it seemed like to me. And I would think that his first singles match back probably won't be that long. It'll be like a good warm-up. I think Corbin's a good choice for Reigns to have his first singles match back. I can't imagine that he'll be wrestling on Raw Monday. Maybe he'll do an angle, or maybe he'll do a six-man, but his first singles match I would have thought would be at Fastlane. As far as WrestleMania goes, maybe he's going up against Drew, maybe Lashley. probably one of those two, I would have thought. What do you think?
Drew's the only one that I can really see that would be a good match. I mean, it's not blockbuster, but I think Drew kind of deserves a big match, and Roman would be a big match for him to have. I think they should throw Baron Corbin into the sun, so we don't need to put up with him. Do you know what? If Dean Ambrose is going to leave, then yeah, do the Shield at Fastlane one more time. Yeah. Just one last
getting back
time.
To you, there was another thing you asked me there, which I completely avoided or neglected to respond to as usual. It just seemed a bit too soon to me for Rollins and Reigns to be saving Ambrose after the things he'd said about Reigns last year and his betrayal of Rollins on the same night that Reigns had announced that his leukemia had returned. Just felt like that was something that should have happened like in 2 or 3 weeks' time. Seemed far too soon for that.
But then, they don't really have the luxury of it, I guess. You know, Fastlane is next Sunday. We're 10 days away from Fastlane right now, and you know, if I pull up the current card as of now, there is only 4 matches. You know, the Usos against Miz and Shane, Brian and Owens, Bailey and Sasha against Nia and Tamina, and Asuka versus Mandy Rose. You know, that's all we've got so far. So they need matches, and I mean, I guess the question is, if the only time that you can do this last Shield reunion before Dean leaves is at Fastlane, do you do it or not?
Well, I don't think so, no. I just feel like, you know, obviously Dean's heel turn didn't really work. The Ambrose versus Rollins feud was a bit of a flop. But I mean, you go back and look and you know, review what Ambrose said about Reigns and said about Rollins, and there was a lot of venom there. There was a lot of malice there in things that Ambrose said. He hasn't done anything to atone for that. So why are they going out there and helping him? You could say, well, they're doing it to beat down the heels, but also at the same time, they're doing it to help Ambrose. And I feel like, you know, it feels like Ambrose has suddenly done this, you know, he's back to playing this goofy babyface tweener character again. You know, where was the turn? You know, where has this come from? So it just all feels a bit rushed to me. You know, and here we were talking earlier about how Raw is doing its long storylines. The pacing of its storylines is better. I felt they really blew it with this one, Kenny.
I mean, I'm going to disagree with you, actually. I think that with Ambrose leaving, and you don't have much time left, and the turn being such a monumental failure, I get why they did it. You know, I would have had more of a problem with it if Ambrose had just been with them straight away. You know, I like that they're building it a little bit. You know, they had Rollins and Roman kind of make the save, but they're not like buddies with him yet. You know, and I wouldn't even be opposed to the idea of announcing a match for the pay-per-view where it's only Rollins and Reigns against, you know, the heels, and maybe Ambrose shows up on the night to sort of help out. Like, I'm open to it. I think it's a fun story, and, you know, how many times have they tried to do the Shield reunion? I mean, how many times? And every time it just seems to, somebody gets injured. You couldn't pay me to join the Shield now.
Well, exactly. Well, that's where we're going to have to differ, Kenny.
We are. We may, that'll be it. Last podcast for us. Differing views. one of the other big angles on Raw is, of course, when Ronda Rousey and Natalya are taking on the Riot Squad. And at the end of the match, Becky Lynch comes to the crowd. She knocks out Natalya. She starts brawling with Ronda. She's smacking the crutch off of her. They're trying to fight. There's agents and referees trying to pull them apart. Becky gets arrested by the police. She's dragged off. Ronda calls out Vince McMahon. Stephanie comes out. Ronda says she wants Becky reinstated. She tries to appeal to Stephanie's, you know, vulnerable side, saying, you know, this is your legacy. This is your daughter that you've got to think about. Like, do the right thing. And ultimately, she lies the title on the ground, says Vince needs to make the right decision, and she walks off. It was a lot going on, a big segment, a big angle. What did you make of it?
Well, I noticed that Ronda mentioned for the first time on TV, and I don't think this was acknowledged again, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm sure you'll do that. Ronda mentioned the possibility of a triple threat match with Charlotte at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think that is the first time it's came up.
Yeah, and it wasn't something that they lingered on afterwards. So I don't know whether she wasn't supposed to say that or was supposed to say that. I mean, Rousey, to me, she gets the thing that her strength on promos is almost her weakness as well, where she can tell she gets so wound up and she's so in the moment.
And some people love her for that, some people hate her for that.
Yeah, I think she speaks too quickly and sometimes kind of trips over her words, which, you know, occasionally I do on this podcast as well. So I'm sure when you're in front of a crowd, it's something that I would do more often than I do on this podcast. So I just felt that she needs to sort of slow things down. I've said this before. I think Stephanie was there. She was out to try and have a calming influence on Ronda. Just in the promo, but Ronda was like so amped up that she just sprinted through it. I think the message that she made was the same, and even though her delivery at times was a bit choppy, I think she got the message over that you're not going to control me, you're not going to tell me what to do. Here's your title back. You know, I want this match. Give us this match. And if you don't give me this match, then I'm leaving. Here's your title back. So I thought Stephanie sold it quite well. After Ronda left, she saw, like, you know, befuddlement, what's going to happen. She was shocked. It's like, well, where does this leave us? Where's it all going? So I thought it was a good segment in the sense that it's taken the story further. And we've all got a reason now to tune into Raw on Monday to find out where it goes next, because it's all up in the air. So I thought that was a masterful element of it. Which is, you know, the whole thing of like, where does this go? You know, we all want to do fantasy booking, is what we all enjoy. And this has created the opportunity for us all to do that. Where does this go? I think we all know where it's going to go, but we need to tune into Raw next week and the week after in Fastlane just to see if what we think is going to happen does in fact happen. What did you think, Kenny?
I thought it was great. I really, you know, I know what you're saying is right. A lot of people don't like Ronda's promos for the way that she delivers them. That's what kind of makes her promos for me. Like, I like the idea that, like, if I was in a fight, I wouldn't be cutting promos about it. But, you know, if I was in a real situation, I would be flustered in my words. I would be too angry to communicate it. And that kind of works for me with her. Yeah. I like that. And I think because nobody else does it, it stands out for me more. I just thought the angle was really hot. I thought the idea of Ronda calling it Vince, Stephanie feeling a little bit vulnerable and conflicted, which we very rarely see from her. The Becky getting arrested angle was great. I liked the idea of Ronda sort of laying the belt down. You know, the fact that she said, you know, it's not even a belt for me to compete against the best of the best. It's just a prop for you to throw your chosen ones at me. It's a gaudy accessory and all this kind of stuff. Like, she was saying a lot of stuff that people feel sometimes, and I thought the angle was tremendous. So I think people are excited about tuning in next week, and this really feels like a WrestleMania main event build with this match.
It absolutely does. And I think I would like Ronda not to appear on Raw Monday, and from to Stephanie and Triple H and perhaps even Vince as well, to issue some sort of statement about the title. We've asked Ronda to appear on Raw, but she's refused to do so unless we reinstate Becky Lynch. You know, we've reached a deadlock here. We've reached an impasse. You know, we can't come up with a deal here. Sorry, I'm talking about Brexit there, aren't I? So, but you know what I mean? So So I would like something like that to happen where Ronda doesn't appear, so that she's really standing her ground and making the McMahons sweat. I think that would be a really interesting development that people wouldn't be expecting, and would further this storyline in a way that would make it more interesting. You know, it's like, well, Ronda said she's not coming back until Becky's reinstated. And it's like, well, we're not going to be, no one's going to tell us how to run this company. And then eventually they have to relent, or there's a match that takes place that results in Ronda coming back. And I don't know, there's a lot of different directions that can take this in.
And on Monday, you've also got, you know, if they were going to do that, if they were going to give Ronda the week off to kind of sell what's going on. They've got Charlotte coming to Raw to say that she wants to just be anointed the new champion. So that you've already got something there that you can kind of use to keep the angle going.
Yeah, absolutely. And if Charlotte turns up, they could even say, well, we can't do that, Charlotte. So Charlotte's there back on her heels. She's like, well, you know, you're the ones who've endorsed us. You're the the McMahons have endorsed me as champion. Why can't you just make me champion? He's like, well, no, we're not going to do that. And that would be interesting as well, and how Charlotte would react to it. And it would be like people would then be asking questions about Charlotte as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of different things they can do with this. And I think they've set themselves up. They've created something that's given them a lot of options. And a lot of those options can be very intriguing.
And then the big angle that's the main event is Ric Flair's birthday party. We had Triple H and Stephanie, Ricky Steamboat, Sting, Shawn Michaels, the roster were on the ramp. They're all waiting for Ric Flair. He's getting a belt. He's got a cake. There's a video package promoting him. And just as we're about to see him come out, we hear the music. We don't see anything. And we cut backstage to Batista dragging a cameraman to Ric Flair's door. He opens the door, closes it behind him, and then comes back out dragging the sort of lifeless body of Ric Flair. He is dressed in a dark blue leather jacket with blue shades and a nose ring. And he looks at the camera and says, "Hunter, do I have your attention now?" And then Triple H runs backstage. He's trying to check on Ric Flair. And we go off there with a little bit of a cliffhanger. What did you make of, obviously, this Ric Flair's birthday party was going to have shenanigans of some kind. I think a lot of people thought it was going to be Becky Lynch instead. But we got this angle that people weren't really expecting. How did you feel that it played out?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, we know that this Batista versus Triple H match has been on the cards on and off for years. It's something Batista's always wanted to do, to end his career on a high or a low note, however you want to call it. I think the timing of the Avengers movie without being released, I think it's April 26th that comes out, so just a few weeks after WrestleMania. I think that has been part of WWE's motivation to book this match now. Also, Batista's just turned 50. Triple H is 50 this year. So, I mean, and WrestleMania, I think, needs a big nostalgia match. I think it needs a big match, which, you know, at this point...
Needs a celebrity match, which it's got now, because Batista is a big celebrity.
Exactly. So Batista's going to be doing the interviews for the Avengers movie. And, I mean, I know WWE doesn't struggle for mainstream publicity these days. It's not like 1995 when the 1996, when things were different and nobody would cover them. Obviously, everyone covers them now, so it's a lot easier for them. But I think it's something that's going to be good for WWE, having Dave Batista involved. I'm sure Ric Flair was elated when he was asked to be involved in this angle. It's something that he would have liked to have done. I think also it will result in him making an appearance in the match during the match between Batista and Triple H at WrestleMania. So he'll like that as well, because he'll be a big part of the big show. So I'm sure Flair was absolutely on board with this one and loved being part of the show and being a player in the business again. So I think some people were like, well, why didn't this happen after Flair had had his celebration? I'm sure Flair wanted to do this. I'm sure this really did appeal to him.
The idea that Ric Flair could be involved in one of the hot main event WrestleMania angles for the year, I think he was happy to be dragged across the floor.
Absolutely was. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he'd still be out there doing stuff now if he could, if they let him. He just would be. So,
do you know what's so clever about it as well is that, you know, the idea. So I guess talk a little bit about the idea that Batista is going to be the heel in this scenario.
Well, presumably he is, because he's launched this unprovoked attack on Ric Flair.
But that's what I mean. So, because obviously a lot of people would think that it was going to be Batista being the babyface and Triple H being the heel. What do you think about the idea that they've kind of shaken up the dynamics?
Yeah, I mean, they flipped it. I mean, it is peculiar because, I mean, the Drax character is a long time before I watched Guardians of the Galaxy. I was a big Marvel Comics fan when I was a kid, but Guardians of the Galaxy was after my time. I do go and see the Marvel movies, by the way. I'm a fan of them, but Guardians of the Galaxy didn't really appeal to me. And everyone said, oh, you've got to go and see it. Batista's tremendous in it. I'm like, really? It's like, well, he was, you know, he's crap in that last James Bond film. He was dismal. It's like, oh, no, he's great in this Guardians of the Galaxy. And saw the movie, and I agreed. I thought it was fabulous. Really enjoyed him in the second one. Thought it was a barrel of laughs in the last Avengers film. So, I mean, he's such a babyface character. That's what people know him as, don't they? As Drax the Destroyer, who's a babyface character. So it is curious that they've pegged him as the villain in this feud. I mean, especially since Triple H, as far as I know, has been portrayed as a villain on TV.
But then I don't feel like Batista is coming back and being told he's being a heel. I feel like this is maybe what he wanted to do. You know, he said a lot that he prefers being a heel.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he doesn't need WWE right now, you know. So he doesn't need WWE to buy him that new bathroom, Kenny.
Oh, do you know what? I would be very disappointed if you didn't get a bathroom reference in here.
So, yeah, you would imagine that, because, I mean, if you go back and look at Batista's career, he had the big run in 2005, and this really takes us back to the Triple H match from 2005. I mean, the original WrestleMania match was mediocre, huge letdown. I think they had another match, I think, was it Backlash, like a month later, and that was just okay as well. And it wasn't until they had the famous Hell in a Cell match with double juice and lots of violence and all these things that they can't do now, that Batista and Triple H really, you know, tore it up, really, you know, gave people the match that they wanted from this feud. So you look at this match at WrestleMania, they're not going to be able to do a Hell, well, they could do a Hell in a Cell match, but I doubt that they will. And if they do, there's no one's going to be getting the blade out. We know that. So if you go back and look at their matches, just regular matches from 14 years ago, they weren't really that good. So Batista hasn't wrestled in like nearly 5 years. Triple H's performances on big shows have been spotty at best. We know that Triple H has got this long match compulsion on big events. So, I mean, you know, it's going to go long. It shouldn't go long. So I don't know how this match is going to play out. Then you throw in the thing that you just mentioned, and the thing I'm supposed to be talking about is Batista as a villain when people would probably want him as a face, and Triple H as a face when he's been portrayed as a villain. How's that going to play out on the night? So I am concerned about this match. I understand why they're booking it, and I think it will be big and it's good for WWE. I'm glad Batista has been allowed to do this because it's something that he's yearned to do for years. So I think it's all good in that regard. And I enjoyed the angle as well, but the arrangement of the pieces, the characters, it's like I'm concerned about how this is going to play out on the night.
I think one of the really clever things about it, because I think part of it's got to be that Batista didn't like the last time when he came back as a babyface and people were booing him.
Yes.
And that's going to be part of it. I think what was really clever about it was that they did something that nobody was expecting. It does make sense in some ways, because Triple H is right now supposed to be playing more of a babyface on TV than a heel. You know, because there is this big kind of, we'll talk about this more in the overrun, this kind of McMahon Civil War thing where Vince is kind of overruling everybody.
Yeah.
But the key is, like, Batista did this to Ric Flair and the crowd didn't get Ric Flair. They didn't get him afterwards. They were robbed of that celebration. And that's good heat to give Batista. So, and, you know, I think the story is there, Batista said to him on SmackDown 1000, you know, "You've never beat me." Triple H never responded to it, really, never rose to it. Batista said in media interviews for years he wants to wrestle Triple H, and Triple H has never responded. And then Batista's waited until the 70th birthday of, you know, Triple H's all-time favourite and guy he looks up to, and destroyed him. So I think the groundwork's there for a good story. But I think cautiousness to it is absolutely warranted, but I think ultimately it's going to be good. Batista is advertised for Raw this Monday, we should mention. So,
right, okay.
He's going to be there in Philadelphia.
I mean, if you look at the heel character, obviously he did the turn when he came back in 2014. He had to, and then he was effective in Evolution. I mean, if you go back and look at his 2010 run as the sunglasses wearing indoors, skinny jeans sporting super heel, I mean, that was to me, in terms of character, that was the peak of his career. He was fabulous in that role as this vainglorious heel who loved himself and, you know, was a total fashion disaster, but, you know, was just, you know, he was sending himself up, basically. I said earlier about Honky Tonk Man being a self-deprecating heel and how we need more of that in wrestling. I mean, we kind of do need, I think if he's playing that character, people are going to be more inclined to boo him, but it's like you're right with the whole thing of, hey, Hunter, do I have your attention now after you previously ignored me? That all plays into the storyline. But it is kind of tricky because the character he plays in the Avengers movies, which is what people know him for now, is so likable. And also, Triple H likes to have long matches on big pay-per-views, and these two should not have a long match. So that is a definite concern right now.
My one thing, I like the story. I actually like the idea. Do you know what's funny is there's a few people that I know who detest WWE storylines generally, and they loved this, which I think is pretty interesting. Because you would think that that would be something people go, oh no, Batista's going to be the heel, what a stupid move. A lot of people liked this. A lot of people liked this was kind of a shocking angle. It was out of left field. You were left with a cliffhanger. So I guess we'll see how they let it play out. But the one thing that I will say with you 100% is this should not be a 35-minute match. At all. Like, I mean, does Triple H not understand that, like, you could have a really good 15-minute match? Like, just do that.
Yeah. Get it over with and get out.
Exactly. Well, listen, we're going to head off now. We're going to be doing the overrun when we talk about SmackDown and what happened there whilst we reviewing some old Power Slam issues. We've also got a listener question from Tony Wicker, actually, as well, so we'll cover that. But Finn, where can people find you on online, especially if they wanted to, you know...
No, don't mention it, Kenny. There's been enough plugs this week. I'm just going to mention enough plugs this week. They can find me on Twitter at @FiddlyMartin. Where can they find you, Kenny?
Well, once you've obviously bought the Power Slam Interviews Volume 2 and read the full Honky Tonk Man interview, which I would recommend, you can then go over to find me on social media at KennyMC1985 or @Inside_the_Ropes. You can buy tickets for Goldust, our tour next week, Tuesday in Birmingham, Wednesday in Manchester, Thursday in Glasgow, Friday in Belfast, finishing up in London on Saturday. You can get those tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk/Goldust. So thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you've had a good time in listening to the show. Let us know what you think on social media. And Finn, thank you again for joining me.
Well, thank you, Kenny, for having me. It's been your pleasure.
It's been my pleasure to have you. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. Bye. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.